Good evening, everyone. Sorry for the slightly late start this evening. First off, let's do Sancho. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo Namu Myoho Renge Kyo Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you very much. I don't expect this video to go very long because it's just, although I'm long-winded. I'd like to wrap up the last three, the first three videos in this series with a concrete application to something that is, and you're going to hear me say this a lot, I suppose, but there truly is a lot of information out there on Buddhism that is based on either the very early teachings that don't take into account the building upon teaching upon teaching upon teaching to finally get to the Lotus Sutra, the culminating teaching of Buddhism. There's all kinds of reasons for that as Buddhism spread across all of Asia, and folklore entered into it and then got kicked back out and blah 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 blah. There have been a tremendous effort in the history of Buddhism with dedicated scholars to every few hundred years just clean up and get back to the essential teachings of Buddha. Anyway, I'm going off track. All I want to say is that there's a lot of misinformation out there or incomplete information that ends up misleading people. So that's why this series I felt was really important. I'm really trying to nail down this fundamental framework of Buddhism, which today in modern science is just starting to peek out of science and medicine, things that Buddha understood 3,000 years ago. Now that we've been talking about this quiescent energy, this amala consciousness, Japanese ku, Chinese wuji, quiescent energy, every culture has some kind of concept of the beginningless beginning, the beginning before the Big Bang. And so what we've been discussing in the last three discussing the lectures have been about this quiescent energy and how there's no karma there. So today I'm going to resolve this, and I'm going to try my darndest to clear up a lot of miscommunication about what karma is. I'm not going to start by making it easy on you, because I'm going to tell you right off the bat, there are two distinctly different kinds of karma. Although they act in the same way, this is a critical point of the final teaching of Buddhism. It's often referred to as karma with a big K and karma with a little K. However you distinguish it, I will give you the point of demarcation very clearly this evening. As I've been describing, and I'm not going to go ad nauseum into it because you can look at the previous videos, causal chains are karma. So what is karma? Karma often is said to be the Sanskrit word or the Pali word for kama, being Pali, for action, loosely translated as action. But I don't think that's a satisfactory description. I think that you need to know that that action is made up of something else. This energy, which, as we know from Einstein, materializes in vastly different ways. Energy, quiescent, just energy, has no form. So in order for form to come from energy, there has to be a force applied to it, a motive force. That can start out being very super, very, very subtle, minute, and then the form, the tendency toward a form and name will arise and then fall away and disappear again. The interaction, as we talked about M theory, where there could be two vast plates of areas of energy that collide, and that there's a cataclysmic friction and event that happens there. That has been postulated to be the Big Bang. Whether you want to interpret the Buddha's teaching of cosmology as there are billions of universes created moment to moment, or that we all create our own universe within our own chain, however you want to look at that, isn't as important as understanding that the chain of events, which are what? Energy being moved, motion, motive force being put into energy in order to transform energy into some potential. That's karma. Now, in Buddhism, we talk about consciousnesses, right? We start from the quiescent energy, which is the Amala consciousness. Nothing but potential there. Nothing exists there, but everything comes from there. Okay? The karmic chain begins, and the karmic chain to make you and I began, I always forget these numbers. How old is the universe? It's like 40 million years old. Let's just say, maybe it's 4 billion, but the four is in there somewhere. I just don't remember how many zeros. But the point I want to make is that in order to get to Frank and Bob and Helen and Shirley, the chain reactions that we evolved from, billions and billions of chain reactions, started with the universe. So all of us, although we might want to look at our lifetime as being from birth to death, our karmic lifetime, all of our karmic lifetimes, only varies a few dozen thousand years. And in the scope of millions of years, that's not very much time. We all started around the same time because we needed this universe to be created in order for us to have a place to instantiate our vision consciousness, our touch consciousness, our smell consciousness, our mind consciousness, our repository of all these causes and karma. Okay? I'm making this point again because I want you to understand this is karma with a big K. That what we're an instantiation of, a manifestation of as human beings, is an incredible, unknowable, unfathomable number of reactions that have splintered and splintered and splintered and splintered and splintered. And some of those splintered reactions manifested as gases, some as grass, some as trees, some as dogs, some as men, some as women, some as, and those are all separate. They all came from the same beginnings, but think about the root structure of a plant. There may be one main root, but it just continues to divide and divide and divide and divide and divide and divide. And although all of those roots, no matter how many hundreds of thousands they are, may all come from that same seed, They all vary in slight little ways, don't they? So I'm giving you a visual analogy on this karma with a big C. Now, when this karma with a big C think of it this way, this karma with a big C, a big K, capital K. It has been instantiating and driving itself out like a root system. Out of inertia. Do you know what inertia is? Something begins, it's like a chain reaction. When something begins to move, it tends to stay in motion. When something stops, it tends to stay stopped. It always takes motive force to move energy, karma. As long as karma is happening, then things are developing. But we develop in a chain reaction that's caused by its own reactions. When that karmic stream that is you finds a sympathetic place to manifest, and that sympathetic place is going to be karma that's sympathetic with it. Think of DNA. We can tell if you're a child of a certain man and a certain woman by looking at the DNA and seeing how many alleles are shared between you. This is karma. This is the causal chain. Your causal chain will fit nicely into other causal chains that are most similar to it. This is why this whole, and this is an aside, but this is why the whole idea of the Hindu idea of reincarnation is so mind-bogglingly mystical and stupid. When you understand how nature works and how life works and the process works, and you see these causal chains, the only way a causal chain can manifest as something is if it can manifest within something that supports what it is. A chicken can't be born to a human, right? I mean, it just makes sense. So why would you think that you could be reborn as a chicken or a cow? It's ridiculous. Anyway, sorry, it's an aside. But I just want to drive home the point that when you find that karmic environment that's simpatico to your karmic chain and in the way that you're designed, you will meld with that spermatozoa and that egg cell. You are the third entity in birth. There are three people involved in birth, three karmic chains, at least. And the karmic chain that is you mixes with this male and female karmic chain. So that then, see, this is a very critical moment. You could call this a big bang. Because now your big K karma, K Sylvain, not C, your big K karma suddenly isn't all yours. Now a bunch of reactions start to happen, right? A whole another tree starts to happen, but this tree isn't just a formation from this original energy and the energies that were created and on the way to materialization, but is now negotiating with these other, albeit similar, still different, male and female causal chains. This is when a new consciousness happens. It has to happen. Because three consciousness just boom, just got mixed together. It's not the mom, it's not the dad, and it's not entirely you. It's a new you that is provisional for this lifetime. And the big difference with this new you is that now you're self-perceiving. From the moment of instantiation in the womb, you are a you have a mind consciousness and you're observing, maybe at extremely rudimentary levels, but you're developing your hearing consciousness, you're developing your touch consciousness, you're developing your smell consciousness, your taste consciousness. All these consciousnesses are developing, and a mind consciousness is communicating with all of them to put them together. This is why you may be a right to lifer, and you have the perfect right to do that. I'm not going to castigate you, but strictly in Buddhism, life starts at that moment of instantiation, that moment of those three karmic chains uniting. Before the female even knows it's pregnant, a life, a consciousness, several consciousnesses, but a human conscious is at work. Now everything changes. Because from that point on in this lifetime, you're conscious about a lot of the causes you can be conscious about all of the causes that you make. Buddha estimated that you make about 180,000 decisions in every moment that you exist. In other words, it's unfathomable. But the point is, you're making karmic causes. You are lending motive force to the energies extant in your life, which now not only include the karma with a big K, but the karma with a big K that's coming from the father and the karma from the big K of the mother. So your three Ks, don't go there, your three different hardwired karma, I'll call it. That's the karma that in almost every other version of Buddhism, in Hinayana, Tripitaka, all the earlier forms of Buddhism, is considered immutable, can't be changed. And this is where they start talking about millions of lifetimes and blah, 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 and they don't get it. In the Lotus Sutra, and in the final second Nirvana Sutra, where Buddha talks again about the Lotus Sutra, he makes it clear that all karma is mutable. How can that be? How can those three capital K karmas come together immutable, and consciousness, sentience, self-perceiving consciousness in this lifetime allows you to change it? In this lifetime, how is that possible? Well, I'll tell you, this is the karma with the little K, and maybe it should be the one with the big K, because this is the important one. It's very important to know where you came from. It's very important to know that the stuff that makes you up is over 40 million years old. As Joni Mitchell says, we're all stardust, right? But I think the whole practice of Buddhism is based on the fact that if we can observe all those little monkey minds and arrest them before they act, we can capture our karma in the formation stage. We can capture the motive force that's about to combine with energy to get us to take an action. As we mature, there are a lot of times we want to burst out with a comment and we stop ourselves. And it's physically difficult. We feel the hard work. Stop, don't say that. That's exactly what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about doing it with hundreds of thousands of decisions that we're not paying attention to. Buddhism is about increasing our own self-awareness and perception to the point where we can arrest any thought in its process of becoming karma and adjust its motivation to either let it die out or to convince it in a life-affirming way and thereby change the direction of the karmic chain for that particular thing. Now, in this lifetime, we're making a ton more causes, but now the causes we're making, the karma we're creating, is no longer just from our ancient karmic chain. It's a melange of three that we're now interpolating and leaping onto our bucket. The bucket where all of that 40 million year old karma and the new karma of the three together is held is called the Alaya consciousness. It has all the karma, like a big memory bank, a big huge computer, okay? And it remembers every decision that was made with a rising thought to create an action toward a consequence. It's built, that's why cause and effect is instant. You don't make a cause and go, wonder what that's going to do. It's in the cause. The effect is there. It may not manifest immediately, but it will manifest. It may have to combine with 1,000 others before the full effect is known. This is why it's so important, and you've heard this term many times if you've studied Buddhism at all. This is what's called mindfulness. To be so aware that we can prevent, maybe it's impossible to prevent all of them, but if you could, that would be Buddhahood. To be able to see your thoughts arise and guide them gently into a positive result is enlightenment. It is what the practice of Buddhism is for. This is what is meant by karma. It's very, very, very different from the common misperception that karma is like retribution. You do something bad happens to you. Well, yeah, I mean, that's a pretty simple equation. And you could say, as somebody who understands karma, that's not entirely wrong. But it sure minimizes the grandeur and the amazing nature of karma. Let me put it another way. If you follow me so far, and I hope you do, as a conscious sentient being, we are able to impose our will, our mindfulness, on this incredible chain of reactions to improve on our nature. Now, when we die, that Alaya consciousness that we've spent our whole life adding, influencing, and nurturing, have we on the whole nurtured all of the bad habits and life unaffirming behaviors? Because that whole Alaya consciousness is now going to meld back into the Amala consciousness. And it's going to dissipate. It's not going to be karma anymore. It's just going to be a tint or a taint on that ocean of energy that the next time it instantiates a bunch of humans or sentient beings, whatever they are, will have as a fundamental component that negative cause-making stuff. So this is the grandeur of Buddhist practice. This is why the Bodhisattva practice is so important. Because it's one thing to attain enlightenment and improve your life daily with your practice of Buddhism, changing karma, as you've heard it said. But you're really redirecting it and influencing your karmic tendencies in a positive way to do positive things, life-affirming things. If you do that, then not only have you affected your life condition, but you've also affected this huge repository of the Alaya consciousness that you carry with you. And when you put that back into quiescence, you will be affecting the stuff from which everything else is made of. How huge is that? Let alone, I mean, we can sit here and talk about how that behavior influences those around us. Obviously it does, because it influences us. If we act differently, we attract different people to us, and we repel others in ways that we don't even know or understand. So instead of obsessing about every little thing, just obsess about yourself. That other stuff will just get handled. It'll just get handled. Because we always attract like-minded, people, like environments, like civilizations, like same energy, like big magnets. Right? You change polarity on magnets, they don't waste any time changing directions. So karma. Karma is volition with energy toward action. So it's not just action, it's the formula of a motive force put behind energy. And it's in a meditation in the book, where it says the perfect fusion of Tai Chi and Qi. Tai Chi is motive force. Qi is life energy. Put them together, you create action. That's karma. Okay? Talked about Ku, quiescence, Wu Ji, volition, Alaya consciousness. Well, I'm looking at my notes, and that's what I wanted to nail down today. I think that's probably big enough to really think about until next week. I hope you understand karma better now. It's not just a simple tit for tat, thing for thing. It's actually an immense process. And what karma is something that we influence. And the way that we influence it is karma. So try to untangle that. I've gotten a few comments on videos, and it's so incredibly helpful. Please feel free to question if you can, or just if it, even if it's not directly related, if a question pops up in your mind as you're listening to any of these videos, just go ahead and put it in the comments. It doesn't matter, because it will help me tremendously in seeing what I'm leaving out of the conversation, how I can help you better understand. That will help me better do my job. I've dedicated my life to facilitating your path to a joyful, secure, happy life. Let's do that together. Work with me. Tell me what you need. No question is irrelevant. We're dealing with the fundamental processes of life. That is Buddhist practice. I can think of no greater expression of love and appreciation than to have this kind of dialogue between human beings. So please join me, and let me have something else to talk about. Surely appreciate you folks. We'll close with Daimaku Sancho, and I thank you once again for participating in this great journey of ours. All right, here we go. Myo Renge Kyo Nam Myo Kyo Nam Myo Renge Kyo. We're going to get to what that means in one of these videos, but we're not quite there yet. So hang in with me. Appreciate you a lot. Thanks for listening. Have a great rest of your day.